When you're trading options, Fidelity has just what you need with straightforward but powerful tools to help you select a strategy and execute your ideas. And they offer a wide range of information and insights to help simplify your trading experience. Have a question? Ask it live during their small classes and coaching sessions. Need information? Check out their educational videos, articles, and webinars. See why it's easy to trade options your way at Fidelity. Start now at fidelity.com/options. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. Clock on the East Coast, April the 9th. It's a Tuesday. Yankees play tonight. As do the Rangers, by the way, Dan. Dan Nathan Guy and Tommy, soon to be joined by the great Carter Braxtonworth of Worth Trading. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing great here, Guy and Tommy. I mean, I felt like, you know, we've had this theme in the markets. We look up, it's like unched on the day, but there's some stuff going on under the hood. Today felt like one of those days. This morning, finally, maybe something was going to get going, Guy, but here we are. Same old a little bit. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think on what was a pretty benign day, although be it a little bit of a sell-off earlier, I mean, we had a VIX that traded north of 16 and a half at one point. It's obviously pulled back significantly. I'm sure we'll look at that. But, you know, the VIX has been telling a story now, I think, for the last week. We've pointed that out, and I continue to watch that. So you're right. I mean, the market came racing back. I think at one point the NASDAQ went positive, you know, an hour or so ago. But and we'll see how things shake out. But the VIX, to me, on what should be, you know, historically a day where it does nothing, has been doing something now for the last few trading sessions. Just something to watch.
No, and you've been mentioning that. I think it makes some sense here. If it is Tuesday, Guy, that means we are going to do some trades using the options. Let's go to the rundown really quickly here. You know, Carter, he's going to join us, as you just said, in a couple minutes. He had a great note out on Worth Charting, I think, late last week, just detailing all of the 5% pullbacks in the S&P 500 and some of the kind of moves that come with that. So we're going to take a look at that. We're going to show you a way to play for a 5% pullback using options, defining your risk. And also, we're going to look at some consumer stuff. Some of the stuff, Guy, under the hood, again, to use that expression, not so great in consumer land, at least how it's being reflected in some kind of name brands that we all know and love, at least in the stock market. And then obviously, earnings get kicked off here a little bit. So we're going to take a look at Delta, and we're going to look at JP Morgan. There's a bunch of the money center banks reporting Friday morning, Guy.
Yeah, Delta's had a bit of a run. You got an upgrade, I think, earlier this week or late last week. I want to say the price target got ratcheted up to low 80s or high 70s. So that's obviously going to be an interesting one into earnings. But let's bring them in, I guess, because why not? We have them in the wings. Bring in the great Carter Braxtonworth of Worth Charting. Carter,
in the wings.
How are you?
Good.
You look good. Yeah. Oh, you always look good.
CB Dubs. So let me ask you this, because we've been tracking some of this data. You know, it's like the longest period since 2018 that we haven't had a 2% down day in the S&P 500. Last week, when you put this report out, you did this work on the S&P 500, all 5% sell-offs, a summary. What was the reason that kind of caused you to do this? And kind of just walk us through some of your findings. Anything surprising? You know, Guy just mentioned we had a VIX this morning above 16. I think it was on market call early last week. We were talking about a VIX, Guy, below 13.
Yeah, well, I mean, only because one could expect some sort of give back, right? Some sort of dip, correction, decline, drop, plunge, meaning we've been in a steep, uncorrected, now fairly mature advance, October here to April, 6 months in the making, S&P up 28, QQQ up 30, but it's not just tech, of course. Caterpillar's up 60. American Express up 60. Old line companies that have nothing to do with AI have doubled the performance of the S&P 500. And so the question is, you know, can one anticipate and then prospectively profit from a pullback, right? A dip, and you choose the words. But so we thought we'd go back, and it's data just that we have on file, but look at every 5% plus, again, you choose the word, let's go with correction or dip, in the history of the S&P 500. And the reason years ago we settled on that was when you look at a stock that's up 1% or a currency down 2% or an index up or down 3%, you know, that could happen in a day, it could happen in a couple of days. It's all just sort of the daily coming and going of trading, but something happens once you go down 5%. Whether it's because risk managers walk into the room, which often does, because you got to cut the book back, or people have stop losses actually entered. Hey, 5% is my point at which I take it down by a third. Point being that once you go down 5%, what we found, and you'll see it here right on the screen, is that the declines typically accelerate. So if you look at all 5% plus, the point at which 5% had been triggered, now that's not the case now. We were down only about 2.26%. From the peak of 5-7 sessions to get to last week's low. But once you trigger 5, you see the numbers circled there in red. The average and median 5% ends up being somewhere 9, 10, 11. And so also it's how long do you go? How frequent are these things? And right now we're in our 6th month without so much as a 5%er, but they happen typically every 2 to 3 months. And so while this is not at all the longest stretch on record where you haven't had a 5%, it's, I think, getting far along. And so you see the numbers here. They are what they are. And that doesn't mean it has to happen, nor does it mean it has to meet the average or the median. But this is not just a small data set, right? It's and we have a table. I don't know if we have that, but we have every single one. And it's worth studying and trying to learn from history.
No question about it. You know, and it's not for this show, but I'm curious as to if that would hold true for individual stocks. My sense, it probably does, quite frankly. But let's look at the charts that you brought, because I love it when you put on these annotations, because I think, again, visually, this helps the audience a great deal.
So there's our last 5% plus sell-off. That was the July 27, October 27 move. It was almost 11%. And it lasted some 3 months. And then since then, of course, the S&P has rallied 28, 29. Again, the Qs, 30, 32. And then things like Caterpillar and American Express up double, up 60. And so since the October low to where we are now, 6 months in the making, and you see these minor drawdowns. Let's go with that word, right? And so the question is, do you need something? You don't have to have it, but do you need something more in line with 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And I think there's every possibility that's coming. I don't know if we have some other charts. I can't remember quite what we, yeah. So let's flash those back and forth, put the channel on, put the channel off. The channel is what it is. We're at the lower band. And obviously, yeah, we're going to bounce here at the lower band. That's exactly what's going to happen. It's going to be continue like a pinball ascending within the channel. But my hunch is otherwise. I think we undercut. Now, if and as we were to undercut, let's keep going. You know, that's a judgment, mine, the red arrow, but where might we go? And let's do that. So look at those red hash marks, and then let's put in the percent decline. And what you'll see that these are levels that have to be considered because they represent, that would be down 5% at 5,000. There's a 7.5%, there's a 10, and there's a 12.5%.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Listen, great work. And it's really interesting to see that, you know, we've been highlighting the fact that we just have not had a down 2% day in over a year. And when you think about that, it just kind of reeks at the sort of level of complacency, especially when, you know, we've gone from the excitement in the stock market when it took off about 46.50 or so, you know, late last year, the notion that there was going to be 6 rate cuts at some point throughout the course of 2024. And here we are, those rate cuts keep getting pushed out and they've been kind of cut in half, if you will. And that it feels like it's going lower. The fact that rates have stuck around, some of these CPI readings have been pretty hot. So when I think about this, some of these inflationary readings have been hot. We're going to see about CPI tomorrow. I look at your technical work and I say to myself, you know what? The options market is really giving you an opportunity to play for this sort of move. And what I think is a very cheap fashion in dollar terms, but also in vol terms. I just want to show my chart really quickly of the S&P 500. You know, I look at that 50-day moving average. We talked about it, Guy, yesterday on Market Call when we were looking at it through the lens of the futures. You know, a retest of that level of 51.15 or so seems like could be in the cards tomorrow if we have hot inflation data on the CPI. Then I go and look at the options market. I look at implied volatility, the price of options in the SPY. And we know that generally it's going to be very low for an ETF that tracks an index of 500 stocks, right? You don't have the idiosyncratic risk of one single stock. But look at that. It's picking up off of those kind of two-year lows, if you will. You could say, well, you know, the price of options is getting a little bit more expensive. Well, maybe that makes sense given where rates are, given the sensitivity to some of, the inflationary data and the like here. So I say to myself, okay, I don't like idioms like sell in May and go away. I know you do, Guy. But I say to myself, I want to look out to May expiration here. I think we're heading into Q1 earnings period. I think that there's generally a level of kind of optimism about earnings growth that's expected to be maybe 12% or so this year. And maybe if we start getting some of these Q1 earnings or Q2 guidance that disappoints, that with a higher rate environment, we start seeing a move back towards that 5% level that Carter just laid out. And then do we overshoot is the question. So I want to use options. I want to look at May expiration. Today, when the SPY was trading about $517. You could look at a May 515, 490 put spread. That's $25 wide. It would cost you about $5, paying about $7 for one of the May 515 puts and selling to open one of the May 490 puts at $2. So that max premium is $5. That is your risk. Your profit's up to $20 between 510 and 490 on the downside with a max gain down at 490. You have losses up to 5% between 510 and 515 with a max loss of $5 at 515 or higher. This trade only risks 1% of the ETF price, okay? And it's giving this downside exposure down about 5.5% or so. You can make 4%. Now, here's the deal. You can say, okay, well, 4% is not so much. We just kind of laid out some levels here, but you are basically risking $5 to possibly make 20 if this ETF is down, 5.5% or so over the next 5 or 6 weeks. I just like those odds, Guy. And when you think about it from a risk reward standpoint, you're not playing. This is kind of, maybe it's a stand up double, Guy, if you get this thing down to 490. Thoughts here?
Well, I think you're going to know, to your point, you're giving yourself some time, but I think you're going to know very quickly by the end of this week, specifically on the back of the news tomorrow and then subsequently Thursday's PPI number, if you're going to be right. And again, I think risk reward, you're looking at 4-1 in your favor. And quite frankly, it's probably about 50-50 in terms of this trade's going to work out. You probably have the exact numbers in front of you. So with that math, I'll take it anytime. And again, the fact that we've broken that uptrend line in the S&P, which we've drawn for a while, the fact that we're now through it, the fact that we bounced up, sort of retested the uptrend line, seemingly have failed, the fact that the VIX seemingly is showing strength here on what was, I would still submit pretty benign markets. I mean, that indicates to me that maybe we're on the precipice of something. So I definitely like the way this trade is structured, Dan.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So Guy just said the probability of this trade being successful. So if I look at the May options chain, right? If I look at the May 510 put, okay, that is the break-even level, right? Down at 510. If I paid $5 for this 25 wide put spread, if I look at the delta on the May 10 put, it's basically saying about 35% probability. So like you think about that, right? And if it goes down, so that means for every dollar that the SPY moves lower, okay, that option is going to move by 35 cents. And the closer you get to the money, that delta is going to increase. Mm-hmm. In the money. So that's how you can kind of figure out what the probability of success, at least what the options market is pricing right here. All right. So that's our little hedge. You can
right.
use as an outright bearish bet, or if you're like looking ahead a portfolio for a down 5% move, Guy.
And the math suggests 35% when you factor in against some of those things that are not factored in, some of the, the feel portion of this business. That's why I sort of came up with 50-50. I'm not suggesting I'm right.
Trading options might be new for you, or maybe you've been doing it for a while. Either way, Fidelity is your go-to source for clear and relevant information about trading options. For example, ask Fidelity professionals questions during their live small classes and coaching sessions and learn more with educational videos, articles, and webinars. Plus, with Fidelity's straightforward tools and technology, you'll find it easier than ever to trade options your way. See what's waiting for you at fidelity.com/options.
Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risks. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request.
All right, we're going to trade some more options here, but I want to hit a tweet. This is from Carl Quintanilla. Carter, maybe you have some thoughts on this because you do a lot of sector work here, okay? So this is from Goldman Sachs. Investors are concerned that recent management commentary from consumer-facing companies suggests that some signs of weakness, Costco missed consensus U.S. sales estimates for the month of February, Lulu, Nike, and Ulta all recently issued disappointing forward guidance. Last month, McDonald's CFO called out a challenging consumer environment, while this week, Darden missed on revenues. Talk to us a little bit about how you're thinking about, like, we can just pull up some of these charts. Look at a Starbucks today. I think it's making new 52-week lows, right? There's a whole host of these names. The Home Depot chart looks horrible. You know, it just came down really hard. What is some of your work suggesting here, Carter, right now as it relates to these consumers?
So let's go to the ones that really took a hit. You'll see on Carl's list there, just referenced Lulu, for instance. So Lulu, one of three to look at in terms of Starbucks and McDonald's have been declining for months. Yeah. But Lulu, the drop in Gap. Let's go to PVH, Philip Van Heusen. That's the most pronounced of all. PVH plunged 140 to 110, almost a 30% drop. And Ulta, ULTA. So aggressive moves to the downside, obviously in response to earnings or some other kind of thing. And so the question is there something that's a little dodgy going on in consumer? Because you have a major, you know, there are articles about McDonald's is not cheap food anymore, so forth and so on. Listen, I remain in the camp that rates aren't going higher and that actually there will be a proper slowdown. And the kind of action in names like this doesn't happen if all is well, not to mention Nike, let's put that bad boy up there. I mean, you know, there are a lot of big brands and KE that are just not acting well, consumer brands that, I mean, you know, and then of course, as you mentioned, Starbucks, McDonald's. And so one could say, yeah, but within consumer, housing stocks are great. This is true. There's always things that are working and not working. But there's enough of a message from these names, Ulta, PVH, Lulu, Nike, and so forth, that one has to, I think, have a cautious view as we go into earnings.
You know, Dan, you're going to take a look at Nike, but real quick, in terms of, you know, my take on things, when McDonald's told you, and this was probably now a month and a half or so ago, when they came out and said, you know, and I'm paraphrasing to a certain degree, but their consumer is actually struggling with price points. We've been doing fast money for 17 years. That's the first time that I've ever heard language like that out of McDonald's. We've heard it from other companies without question. So for me, that was a bit of a tell. So that obviously spoke to McDonald's. But then you start to look at the barbell of things. Obviously, on the low end of the consumer, the dollar stores, we've seen weakness now for a while. I mean, that's been prevalent for the better part of a year, year and a half. But now Carter just mentioned two of the higher end retailers that are also seeing that. So what it tells me is, you know, both sides of the equation are now struggling and you want to find yourself sort of in the Walmart camp. Short of that, there are not a lot of places you can hide right now in the retail sector. And to me, that speaks to, I think, the problems and some of the dismay that the U.S. consumer is feeling, manifesting itself in, again, not, this is not political, but if favorability ratings were just the stock market, President Biden might have the biggest favorability rating in the history of presidents. It's not. It's something else. And that something else, I think, is manifesting itself in these names, Dan.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So let's take a look at Nike. I have a couple charts here. And, you know, one of the things I was thinking about is like, okay, so like you guys just kind of like laid out a narrative where, you know, the consumer is probably doing worse than what the stock market is suggesting. And if you look at some of these consumer names and how they've traded of late after the results, you'd say, well, the results are kind of bearing that out. For every kind of negative story, there's probably a pretty decent story on the other side of it, right? There's a Walmart to the Costco and that sort of thing. You know, for some reason, you know, we have not been able to find that, you know, Lulu and Nike have been attached to each other, but there is Deckers, right? And so like when I look at the Nike situation, I look at this is a 1-year chart, okay? And you see this like near perfect for the moment, it looks like it could be a double bottom, right? If we were to kind of make a move back towards 100, fill in that gap, you see that downward sloping 50-day moving average. I say to myself, okay, if I had a probably a better handle on the macro backdrop or was more optimistic, I might want to take a shot on that. But then let's look at a five-year chart here and look at this. Okay, so that double bottom looks kind of precarious because there's an air pocket down to that COVID low from 90 down to 80. Carter, thoughts on this setup right here, because I kind of have a trade idea to dip my toe in the water using options. It's not like a pound the table bullish. It's going to 100, fill in that gap. It's like I'm just as equally worried about a break in 90 and going to 80.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is where I would suspect that the premium's pretty pumped up on the bull on the put side. I mean, I like, no one will ever do it. I do it all the time. I like selling naked, you know, so I bet you could sell the 80 puts and sell the 100 calls. It's not going back to 100 to fill that gap anytime soon. You probably go out even past April, 2 weeks, go to May and collect it all. That this is a big stock that's had a big decline, not only on a short-term basis, but a long-term basis. Yeah. It's come down for 2 years. It's still Nike. You know, they're going to be around. Now the question is, could we just make the bet? And so this then the question is, isn't it too binary to make a directional bet that it pops because it's at the prior low, that it drops because it can always drop below a prior low? This is where I think you, again, bet against any big movement and try to squeeze the goddamn thing. But anyway,
there's another way to do it. So here's the thing. And we don't, you know, we don't sell strangles on this. We don't sell naked calls and naked puts and that sort of thing. But like, I look at this and I say to myself, okay, you know, the premiums are kind of elevated here. I kind of want to lean to the long side here and I want to do it without expending a lot of premium. So I want to look at a calendar. I want to look at a call calendar. And so what do I want to do here? This company does not report until late June. So we have plenty of time to kind of play this thing out. But let's just say it can hold in here in the low to kind of mid 90s or so. I want to do this. Okay. So today when the stock was trading at 90.75, I want to buy the May, June 95 call calendar. What am I doing here? I'm buying one of the June 95 calls for $2 and I'm selling one of the shorter dated May calls, the same strike 95 at $1. My max cost for this trade is $1. That is the maximum that I can lose on this trade. Okay. So let's just say we get to May expiration and the stock is significantly above 95. We could look at the options market and saying that's not a high probability event. Okay. We can say, okay, we get to May expiration and the stock is significantly below this current level, right? Then you would lose that premium, okay? That's how this trade would work. But if the stock is below 95, then that short May call, it will expire worthless. And then you're left long the June call that costs two, but it only costs you a dollar. So what am I trying to do here? I'm trying to set up for a move higher after May expiration, financing the purchase of that May, that June 95 call here. So I really like the calendar structure because I'm only risking $1. I've given myself some room to the upside. Ideally, I'd love to see this stock get to 94.5 on May expiration, have that May call expire worthless. Now that June, okay, will basically decay a little bit, but the closer it is to the money, it's going to keep a bunch of that premium, that time premium in it. And then I have another month to see this thing sort of play out. So I like the technical setup here. I'm a little cautious on it, but I like the way the options set up, giving me the opportunity to do a calendar guy.
It's interesting because what you're effectively saying when you do things like this, and Dan knows a lot better than I do, but you're basically saying, you know, you think this is going to trade sideways into an event. The event that is Dan outlined is that earnings release. But, you know, by thinking that, you can actually sort of offset some of the costs to get that basically that date to you want to get out to in your favor. So if this were to go to Dan's point sideways, that call that you sold is going to expire worthless. So there you go. You pick that up and you've just taken the cost of that June call down by half. So it makes a lot of sense. And this is a structure that effectively, and this is the way I look at it, you know, you think you're going to have some sideways action for a while until an event in obviously in the future.
Yeah. Well, and listen, ideally, I'd like to have some sideways to higher action in this sort of thing. And so again, if it starts to move lower, I can look to cut this trade. You know, we like to use 50% premium stops on long premium directional trades. I'm just not risking a whole heck of a lot here. So, okay, I appreciate all that commentary. Carter Braxtonworth, we really appreciate you being here. We just want to, before you get out of here, we wanted to hit one thing, because if we look at the calendar this week, we know that we have CPI tomorrow morning, and then tomorrow after the close, Delta. Delta is a stock that was down 9% after its last earnings. We've seen crude oil move up pretty consistently. Guy's been talking about gasoline and the price there. We thought we'd have you take a look, if you don't mind, before you get out of here. The implied move in Delta, about 5%. It's kind of inched its way higher over the last few months or so. You can see that kind of price action. You see that flattening moving average a little bit. And we thought you could take a look at the JETS, if you don't mind. That's the ETF that tracks the space here, and kind of give us your two cents.
Sure. Before we go to the JETS, let's just talk about Delta for a second. The first thing that one to watch, I sit normal distance from a screen. If one just really went by, you say, wait a minute, if I couldn't see the name, I'd be like, this thing went from 50 to 30 back to 50.
Mm-hmm.
Was it cheap at 50 and then got really cheap at 30? Maybe it was expensive at 50 and got, it was still, meaning this is the vagaries of investing, the vagaries of valuation. What is it worth? Delta's worth 50, then it's worth 30, now it's back to 50. A hard case. My hunch is no real shade, but let's look at the JETS ETF. This is a log chart of the ETF. It's a great symbol, of course. Let's put some lines in. And what we know, we can flash those lines just for fun to, you know, it's like the vacancy sign at a motel there. And then let's put the arrows in. I mean, so do we break out above the downtrend? Possibly, but it's a big move. It's, 15 to 22, and it kind of struck its head at that level. My hunch is there's no real trade here. I'm an anachronism or something, but I would bet against volatility. Let I'd try to strangle it. But again, that's dangerous stuff, and it's not for, not for most people.
Well, you know, this pennant formation, we've seen pennant formations like this before in a lot of things, Dan, and we're having one now. The smart bet would be we're at the upper end of that downtrend line. You know, this thing sells off on the back of the earnings we're going to start to get. With that said, I just saw an analyst raise their price target on Delta, but as Carter mentioned before, it's been in this sort of, 32.5, 49-ish range for a long period of time in the form of Delta. It's been a great trading stock. As a matter of fact, quickly, if we can go back and look at a longer-term chart, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. So I think Carter's pennant probably holds up, and you can see exactly what I meant in terms of this range. I mean, this has now been going on for quite some time. I think you actually can go back all the way to 2021 or so to see the range that Delta's found itself in, Dan.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you say it all the time, guys. Great trading stocks. And, Carter just talked about that range, what has changed so dramatically in the business, given all that volatility. So I think I look at his charts and I say to myself, well, it's yet to violate that pennant to the upside. It looks like at a perfect spot on the downtrend. It looks like it could set up as a decent trade. I'll just make one last point to the downside. Delta sold off, I guess. I just said it, 9% after that last quarter. The way that oil has moved and geopolitics and all this sort of stuff. So, that'll be interesting to see how investors react to it. All right, Carter, we really appreciate you doing a bunch of stuff in here with us. Thanks so much, my man.
See ya. Bye, guys.
All right, Guy, before we get out of here, again, we've talked a lot about the banks last week on Market Call. We detailed the trade idea in the XLF, the ETF that tracks the financials, and we did highlight the fact that we know that Berkshire Hathaway is a big component, but three of those big components are going to report Friday morning. That would be JP Morgan, Citibank, Wells Fargo, I think also BlackRock, if you will. Let's talk about this, the setup here, because, earlier today, I saw a lot of the banks down a bunch. JP Morgan, as we're talking right now, is down 1%. I can't remember the last time I saw JP Morgan down 1%. You can draw that uptrend. This might be one of the most important lines that you're going to draw on any chart in the market to me. Let's see if it gets to that uptrend and how it tests it. Because you see, when's the last time, Guy, you've seen JP Morgan this far above its 200-day
moving average? If you think about it, in a lot of ways, it looks hauntingly familiar to the S&P chart, quite frankly. And again, JP Morgan should not trade, this is just my opinion, but it should not trade as violently one way or the other way as it has over the last basically 6 months or so. And when you get yourself to these extended ranges away, these standard deviations away from a moving average, that should be concerning. On top of which, it's gotten itself sort of expensive in terms of price to book or price to tangible. It always trades at a premium to the others, but it's now trading expensive almost to itself. And listen, there's your trend line in JP Morgan Chase. What does that look like, Dan? It looks like the S&P chart that we've been drawing for a while. And with each day that it goes sideways to lower, more inclined to break that uptrend. And that's what we're seeing right now. So What I will tell you is, if we look at the next implied move, and I said this the other day and I'll say it again, I am really surprised that the options market is only has an implied move of slightly more than 3%. Not because of, you know, JP, just because of the run that it's had and the environment that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, just make one point though, guy. I mean, when you think about this looking like the S&P 500, I see it, but off of those October lows, this stock is up nearly at its highs just last week, up 50%. So the S&P at its highs off the October lows was up 28%. So
no, I'm not saying in terms of the magnet, I'm just terms the visual of it.
I know, but what I'm trying to make the other point is that, yeah, they look alike, but when's the last time you remember JP Morgan outperforming the S&P 500? That's kind of my main point here. So when you think of this implied move, the at the money put, you want to protect a position for a one-day move, it's, you know, 1.5% or something like that. That's not that cheap, but if there was ever a chance there was going to be a big move, for all the banks that are reporting on Friday morning, this is the one that you would expect to probably have the slightest move relative to, let's say, Citi or
no, well, that's fair. I think that's exactly right. And I would submit it should, but I'm just surprised that it's, like, if you had asked me, and I said this the other day, but I'll say it again. If you had asked me, what do you think the implied move of JP Morgan, given everything that we've talked about the last couple of days, given that, I'd have been, it's got to be, you know, 4.5-5%. And obviously we're half of that or a little less than half of that. And I'm just surprised, you know, maybe the market typically knows more than I do, but it's going to be fascinating to see what happens on Friday. Like, I am really interested to see how this thing, what they say, and then subsequently how it performs.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, especially when you consider JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon just had that kind of annual letter out. It didn't seem like there was a bunch of, rosy stuff in there in general. But, the last thing I'll just mention is last week we detailed a trade idea in the XLF. We thought it could be a decent kind of way to play bank earnings over the next couple of weeks, especially if you had a downward bent. We were looking at April 19th expiration. 41.5 puts. Here we are now. The XLF is 41.41 or so. When we looked at it, it was 41.65. And so now those puts have gained a little bit here. So you're kind of in the game, right? It's gone sideways, but because vol's increased a little bit and it's down a little bit, you know, you're kind of up on this one a little bit. Just mention this, guy. So you know, we just talked about JP Morgan at its highs a week or two ago being up nearly 50% versus the S&P that was up 28.5% or something. The XLF at its highs was up 34%. So even with Berkshire in there, it outperformed the S&P 500. This is probably a better way to hedge banks or play an outright bearish, you know, kind of kickstart to earnings season. So, you know, just a quick update here is I think we have this kind of one where we want it. Let's just say this ETF was 41 in the next couple of days prior. I might look to sell a lower strike put and make a put spread, lock in some of the premium that you've gained and reduce your risk on the trade idea. So that's how I'm thinking about trading this thing.
Gary Wright asks, actually, it's not Gary Wright, it's Dreamweaver, but as everyone knows, Gary Wright was the singer of Dreamweaver. Risk Reversal Media, what is the implied earnings move? Is it that expectations will move up and down 3%? He's talking about JP Morgan, but just in general, when we talk about implied moves, what do we mean by that is the question.
Yeah, great question, Dreamweaver. So really what we're doing is, if you think about the price of an option, there's a whole bunch of inputs that go into that, right? Okay. And so when you think about like an earnings event, every options dealer knows, okay, that four times a year, every listed company is going to report earnings. No one knows what they're going to report. No one knows what they're going to guide to. No one knows what the stock is likely to do afterwards, right? But if you are a market maker in options and you have these pricing models, your pricing, you know, movement and the price of the options, you're essentially, okay, you're going to say, arrive at a price where you're willing to sell an option to somebody who wants to buy it. And obviously the same goes for somebody, who wants to sell an option, what you're willing to pay for it, right? And so when we think about implied movement, you know, like basically there's a really easy back of the napkin way to do this. If you were to look in the weekly options or the daily options, whatever the event you're trying to target is, and you look at the money straddle, okay, let's say a stock is trading at $100 and you looked at the 100 strike call, let's say that was trading at $1 and the 100 strike put was trading at $1. The straddle cost is $2. The implied move on that stock between that time period and expiration is 2%. You would basically need a rally of $2 to break even, or you need a decline of $2 down to 98 to break even. That's the implied movement. That's where market makers' models are suggesting they would sell or buy those options that are at the money that have that event. So that's just kind of the back of the napkin way to think about that. And why do we use that term all the time? Because basically, we basically can make qualitative judgments like Guy just did. If you told me that JP Morgan has had this move and it's only this, and you could say, well, what if they have some issue with their treasury portfolio, mark to market? What if Jamie Dimon was telling us something in that 61-page opus that he put out the other day about how he feels about the economy, and maybe they're going to downgrade their outlook on the economy? Those are the sorts of judgments that lots of traders, investors make all the time. And for us, we just look at the options market. It's kind of helpful to get a sense of like, okay, the 3% implied move in JP Morgan is above last quarter. It was only implying 2%, and the stock only moved 1%. So those are the sorts of things we like to consider when we're talking about earnings events.
No, and that's a great explanation. Thank you for that question, Gary Wright, aka Dreamweaver. By the way, if these trade ideas went too quick, you can get them in your inbox, Dan, as you know. So sign up. Why wouldn't you sign up today? Riskreversal.com. You'll get these things. I mean, it goes right through that. What do they call that? Electronic mail.
Yeah, it's called the email, and you're going to get the charts that we use. You'll get the breakdown of the trade ideas all in your inbox. So go to riskreversal.com and do that. And by the way, you know, Guy, you and I preview some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about on the gram, as you call it. I mean, everyone else calls it the Instagram. Guy is guy.adami. I am Dan S. Nathan, and we are at Risk Reversal Media. So check that out every morning. We'll put that out there. Guy, we covered a lot of ground here today. That was fun.
We did. We had the great Carter Worth. Rangers play tonight. Play the Islanders, by the way. That should be fun. Islanders playing for their playoff lives. Yankees 9-2. Off to a great start. Mets squeaked one out last night in Atlanta. We'll see how they fare this evening. And obviously last night, the University of Connecticut once again emerged victorious in the national championship game. The Hurley family. You know, people talk about the Duke dynasties and this Duke. UConn has been basketball central now for the last, you know, 30 or so years. So good on UConn.
Well, you're a Big East guy. When you think about that, I mean, people spend so much time talking about the ACC. Villanova had a little bit of a dynasty going there. Obviously, UConn's been in the game for 25 years. My Syracuse Orange won in 2003 with one of your favorite Knicks ever, Carmelo.
No, you know, I'm not. You know, I'm not
going there. I'm not doing that.
If you're looking to put a team together for a horse competition, Carmelo's your guy. If you're looking to win an NBA championship, look elsewhere. Okay. By the way, it was 40 years ago that the Georgetown Hoyas emerged victorious against the Houston Cougars, I believe. Is that the correct name? I believe that's right. I think it was in Kentucky. I might be wrong. Anyway, there you go.
Rupp Arena. All right, Guy, that was a lot of fun. We will be back tomorrow with EY from SoFi. We got a lot to do with her tomorrow. We're going to take a bunch more questions, so stick around for that tomorrow after we get through our regularly scheduled programming. That's it. You and I are going to be on the big show tonight, CNBC's Fast Money, 5 p.m. Please tune in for that.
Headed now. Thanks, folks.
All right, see you, everyone.